other members will join us in the course of the meeting. It's 2 minutes to go. We'll start with the meeting.
I'm driving around looking for a better reception.
Good afternoon, colleagues.
Afternoon, Mr. Sileku. Chair, all members are here now.
Were you looking for me?
We're waiting for you, sir.
I was waiting for you.
I'm so honored. Thank you very much.
Honorable members, let me start with the meeting, and I should take this opportunity to heartily welcome all of you to this important meeting. This is a meeting of the Ad Hoc Committee on Section 100 Intervention in the Northwest Province. In our inaugural meeting, I expressed certain sentiments in terms of the work of this committee, and I still repeat that this committee has got a very short lifespan, well over 7 weeks to accomplish its task, and I'm glad that we are unfolding the work of this committee. The agenda has been slated before you. Opening and welcome, apologies, and point 3 until point 5 is actually the briefing sessions. We are going to receive briefings from our content advisor in respect of the work of the committee. I think what is quite important is that we need to familiarize ourselves with the issues pertaining to this intervention. He's going to deal with matters pertaining to the genesis of this intervention, where it originated, what happened, what were the issues at play, and thereafter we are going to have some interaction by members and the work that has been accomplished to date. And the content advisor will also take us through certain important issues relating to the considerations and the program for this committee. We will present a draft program, we'll look at it, we'll discuss it, and once all of us are satisfied, we will adopt it and take it as our roadmap that will take us to ensure that at the end of the day, we do our work diligently and report accordingly to Parliament. I'm told that all members of this committee have locked in and you are ready to participate. And we do not have apologies because all members are present in this meeting. Now, what we are going to do, I spoke to the content advisor as we were preparing for this meeting starting from last week, that he will have to take us through certain aspects of this work, especially key issues that are important so that we do actually familiarize, as I indicated, familiarize ourselves with the work of this committee, what has been done in the past, and based on that, we then look at our program, a program that will ensure that we submit very, very clear recommendations to the House about what needs to happen in respect of this the work of this committee. I'm not sure about the members before I hand over to the content advisor. Is there anyone who wants to say something? Nope. No, it's okay. Mr. Gamo is our content advisor. He will introduce himself and then shoot with the presentations. You will guide us in terms of how you have prepared the presentations, whether you want to do the whole presentations or you want to do them bit by bit, and at what point do you think that members of parliament can interact with the presentations. Over to you, sir.
Greetings, Mr. Chairperson and honorable members. My name is Phelani Dlomo. I'm the content advisor for the Appropriations Committee in the NCOP, assisting the ad hoc committee. I've been actually assisting the ad hoc committee since the fifth parliament. I'm going to take you through the three key documents. There are three key out of all the reports that members have received from the secretary. There are three key documents which I'm going to take you through. It's the document called the base document for the Northwest Intervention, which provides the assessment and the diagnostic report by the national executive after the interministerial task team was appointed and conducted that assessment in the province and then presented to the ad hoc committee its findings, as well as the interventions, the proposed interventions as per department. The second report will be an oversight report, which was conducted by the ad hoc committee again later in the 2018, which also came up with some sector findings, very critical findings, as well as the recommendations. On that report, I will not present everything, but I will zoom straight into findings and recommendations of it. The third report will be the legacy report of the ad hoc committee. Just to deal with some of the outstanding issues that at the time of the report, when it was compiled, they were still outstanding. Given the time that a between when the report was compiled and today, when this meeting is considering the report, a lot might have happened. However, it is important for members to actually look at these three reports so that they get an understanding of what happened before the intervention, what led to the intervention, and what is the work that the ad hoc committee did in the first parliament. And that kind of an approach will also assist this ad hoc committee, because most of the members are new in the ad hoc committee, to try and understand and appreciate the kind of approach that the ad hoc committee in the first parliament took and modified to suit the committee's thinking in this particular year. I'm going to, Chair, apologize in advance for bombarding members with a lot of information. As we've indicated clearly that there is a short space of time this committee is given, but for members to also understand these issues, we are obliged to present these reports so that during their spare time, they can also be able to go through some of the issues that we have raised today and come back to us as staff and ask some questions, if need be, questions of clarity where they need clarity. Chair, these reports also, it's safe to mention that they're also going to deal with some of the questions that members had asked and raised during the election meeting in the past week where the chair was elected around the information that needs to carry through from the fifth parliament to the sixth parliament and around the outstanding issues that were asked. So those are the main questions, Chair, that I think this report will also answer as far as it is concerned. I'm going to fly to my first presentation, which is titled Presentation to the Ad Hoc Committee to Inquire into the Intervention in the Northwest Provincial Government in terms of Section 100 of the Constitution. This document was compiled on the 7th of August, 2018. Let me just fly it. I'm not sure if you can see the presentation on the screen.
Yes, we can
okay,
see it.
Chair. All right, Chair. This is the document I would like members to bear with me. If I'm going to be going very fast, I'm trying to do it as quick as possible so that at least we finish on time. The presentation deals with the following sections: the mandate of the NSOP, which I'm not going to talk to it, the background. The most important areas is the submission, which is bullet three, submissions by the Interministerial Task Team, the submissions by the Northwest Provincial Government, the diagnostic analysis by National Treasury, and the Auditor General of South Africa. And then the preliminary observations, the committee observations, some guiding principles which we developed as a way to monitor and benchmark the interventions and the way forward. Of course, this slide, Chair, was prepared for Honorable Karim, who normally asks us about the mandate and the role of the NCOP. In the National Parliament, it's a self-explanatory slide, Chair. I'm not going to go through it. The next slide deals with the constitutionality of the intervention by the national government in the provincial sphere of government, which, in simple terms, Chair, I'm not a legal person. I'm the public finance specialist. In simple terms, Chair, the Section 100 of the Constitution says that if the province is unable to execute its constitutional obligation, the national executive should step in or should intervene on two occasions. One, through Section 101A, which means the national will do an assessment and identify issues of concern and merely send directives to that provincial government to implement. The second aspect of the intervention will be Section 101B, where the national, after doing the assessment, will be able to appoint the administrators and ensure that the administrators come in to turn around the provincial government departments that are identified. In the Northwest, Chair, we will remember that there are 10 departments that are part of the intervention. Five of them are under Section 101A, where directives were issued. The other set of five is under Section 101B, where the administrators that were appointed and they have done some work, as you would see progress in the progress report that we are going to present very soon. I'm going to pass this slide, Chair, because it still deals with the constitutionality and the process of the intervention before it is implemented between the executive and parliament. Chair, as I've indicated to you that there are 10 departments. Under Section 101A, we have Department of Finance, Economy and Enterprise Development, which is the Provincial Treasury, in short, of the Northwest, under intervention. We've got the second department, Department of Local Government and Human Settlement. We've got Department of Rural Environment and Agricultural Development. We've got Department of Social Development, as well as Department of Tourism. So these are the departments here that are under Section 101A, where the executive only send directives to be implemented by the executive, by the provincial executive. That means there was no appointment of any administrator. The existing leadership of departments had to implement those directives, Whereas in section 101B, we've got the Office of the Premier leading the pack there. The second department, Department of Community Safety and Transport Management, Department of Basic Education and Sport Development, Department of Health, as well as the Department of Public Works and Roads. These are the departments that are section 101B, where administrators were appointed, and they are still there in the province to do some work. The next slide, Chair, I will skip it, which deals with the update on the work of the committee. I will skip also the next one, which is the overview of the province, demographics and so forth, as well as the map. As I said, Chair, what is important, it's the key findings by the interministerial task team. So as I've mentioned, Chair, that on section 101A, we've got provincial treasury. Under the provincial treasury, what did the MTT found for its assessment? One, there were major weaknesses in the supply chain management and in the monitoring and support of municipal finance management. Two, there were financial controls in the finance cluster that had collapsed due to historical accumulated unauthorized expenditure, irregular expenditure accruals. This was largely due to non-compliance with supply chain management laws and regulations. And the provincial treasury itself had received clean audit consecutive years, but the weaknesses were there in its fiscal oversight role. The provincial audit outcome are as follows. In the department, unauthorized expenditure of 384.8 million rand during 2017-2018 financial year. There were accruals of 1.1 billion rand as at the beginning of 2017-2018 financial year, and there was accumulated irregular expenditure of 15.3 billion as at the 31st of March 2017. What did the IMTT proposed as interventions to deal with the challenges that have been raised in the findings? To capacitate supply chain management in provincial departments and entities was one of the proposals. Strengthen supply chain management processes and systems, address the irregular expenditure in departments and entities, rationalize the number of Northwest public entities, strengthen local government municipal finance management act units, improve governance structures, planning and budgeting, revenue management, compliance with supply chain management processes and audit outcomes of municipalities. So as you can see, Chair, the first column deals with the findings that the interministerial task team found in the province. The second column deals with the proposed interventions by the interministerial task team in the province. The third column, Chair, then deals with what the provincial government of Northwest deemed as assessment for the province and was presented before the ad hoc committee, Chair, in 2018. The provincial treasury had implemented the post-audit, was implementing the post-audit action plans to assist departments with overall progress in implementing the PAPP, AAP was at 74% as at the 26th of May 2018. The impact of provincial treasury, Chair, support was not visible due to the limited capacity of the Municipal Finance Management Act unit. There was a lack of uniformity with regards to supply chain management business processes. A supply chain model policy was still awaiting approval at the time of the presentation. The Northwest Provincial Internal Audit Function was adequately resourced, skilled, and experienced. This is what the provincial treasurer had indicated to the ad hoc committee. The department had maintained a clean audit in the past 4 years. Rationalization of public entities was underway at the time of presentation. Sound cash management was maintained in the province, though provincial treasury was also concerned with the deteriorating performance of some of the departments, especially with regard to the service delivery. The next slide said deals with the local government and human resource department as one of the departments in section 101A. The key findings that were identified by the IMTT, there was a failure to approve and finalize the organizational structure. 20 out of 22 municipalities had obtained disclaimers or qualified audit opinions in 2016-17. 12 municipalities were dysfunctional and required urgent attention. There was poor financial management. There was inadequate implementation of audit improvement plans and weak municipal support by the department. There was a challenge around water and sanitation functions, which were also weak. There was irregular expenditure of 23.4 million as per the AG report 2016-17. What were the IMTT proposed interventions in the department? One, a governance and compliance with legal prescript needed to improve. Province needed to expedite the approval of new organizational structure for the department. Audit improvement plans were developed and implemented. Appointments of senior managers in municipalities were also monitored. Bloated organizational structure in municipalities were reviewed and revised. What did the provincial department, the provincial government, submitted as their own assessment with regard to this department? One, the finalization of the new organizational structure was underway at the time of their presentation to implement a joint intervention program at 12 priority municipalities was also underway.
Sorry, sir, is it me only that doesn't hear?
I think it's only you. I can hear him very well. Who else doesn't hear?
I hear him well.
Sorry? Honorable Rainer?
Yeah, we're hearing him well, Chair. Thank you.
We hear him quite well. Yes. Just that, what could be the problem, Honorable Zinta? Go on, Mr. Drummer.
But thank you very much, Chairperson. improve placement of technical advisors on a district shared services to provide technical support was also an issue underway. Capacitate municipal oversight structures, MPECs, and municipal officials was underway. The review of business structures of municipalities, development of water and sanitation reliability master plan were the issues that needed some attention according to the report by the provincial government. The next slide, Chair, was also on the same department. The department did not meet, according to the IMTT, Chair, findings, the department did not meet its target in line with the approved business plans. There had been frequent changes of incumbents to the HOD post, impacting on management stability. There was poor audit outcomes due to irregular expenditure. There was lack of technical capacity. There was irregular expenditure of 23.4 million as per the AG report 2016-2017. What were the interventions proposed by the IMTT? One, preparations of 2018-2019 and 2019-2020 delivery business plan was proposed. Preparation of multi-year human settlement development plan intervention was also proposed. Appointment of suitable, qualified, and capable contractors was also proposed. Enhancement of performance of contractors appointed to deliver housing and human settlement product and services was also proposed. Improved management of programs and project performance was a proposal. Then what did the provincial government submitted to the committee was as follows. Implementation plan was developed that looked into the intervention identified. The formulation of joint steering committee was also underway. Work streams were established. Appointment of coordinators by the National Department of Human Settlement was in the process. There was a need for DGs of COCTA and human settlements to synergize. MOA had to be signed between the DG and the HOD of the department. The next slide, Chair, deals with the third department, which is Rural Environment and Agricultural Development. The key findings by the IMTT were as follows. There were structural weaknesses in the department that included inadequate business planning and execution of programs and projects. There was lack of alignment between strategy, the capacity and capabilities. There were challenges in the use of an implementing agent with the agency, agreed delight, creating problems with project implementation. There was an unqualified audit opinion in 2016-17. There was irregular expenditure of about 266 million. There was a wasteful expenditure as well and fruitless expenditure of about 15.2 million as per the AG's report 2016-17. What are the proposals that were made by the MTT based on the findings? One, the assessment of progress and challenges, including audit of projects funded through the conditional grants, such as Comprehensive Agricultural Support Program, CASP, and ILI Malitsema, was needed. The litigation process to demand the closeout report from AgriDelight was also needed. Forensic audit on AgriDelight was also needed. Develop a strategy to avoid the appointment of PMUs was also needed. The provincial department to strengthen strategy formulation and implementation, financial management programs, project management, and human resource management and capacity was also needed. The submission that was made by the Northwest Provincial Government was as follows, Chair. The department had conducted project site visit on conditional grant projects, engagement with National Department of Agriculture, Forest and Fisheries on business plan was ongoing. Report on these interventions was to be completed by 30th of June 2018. No progress had been registered on the audit of CAS project at the time when the report was presented. There was no project on AgriDelight forensic audit at the time when the presentation was done. The litigation for closeout report had been filed before the High Court for argument on 27 June 2018. Strategy to avoid PMUs, which means project management units, was elevated to Department of Agriculture, Forest and Fisheries and National Treasury for consideration. The skills audit was in progress. The next slide deals with the Department of Tourism, which is also falls under the same category of Section 101A. The following issues were identified by the IMTT. I must also indicate, Chair, that in this department, there were no lot of issues that were identified. There were just few issues, Chair, that came up from the assessment of the interministerial task team. One, the structural weaknesses included qualified good opinion for 2016-17 financial year. However, it should be noted that environment function of the department complied with PFMA in terms of accountability, reliability, transparency, and value for money, and good progress was consistently made with regard to service delivery. This was one of the positive issues that was raised by the IMTT with regard to this department. However, there was irregular expenditure of about 9.3 million rand. The intervention that was made by the IMTT was as follows. The department needed to ensure separation of powers between the administration and political leadership. There was a need for assessment of oversight processes between the department and the Northwest Tourism Board, which is the entity under the department. There was a need to improve financial management and contract management. There was a need to improve management of litigations and enhancement of governance arrangement. The provincial government chair made the following submission on the department. Separation of powers between the office of the MEC and the office of the HOD was underway. Skills audit inclusive of verification of qualification at 30th August 2018 was also underway. The correction of HR delegation and financial delegation was also a process underway. Adherence to supply chain management processes to be strengthened and meetings held to communicate this to the staff was underway. Consequence management to follow for non-compliance was going to be also instituted. And the process of filling the finance post and the rest vacant post will be filled in the court department once the duplications with the Northwest Tourism Board had been sorted out. That's what the department had indicated, the province had indicated. There was a performance framework updated to improve the reliability of performance information. Chair, the next slide is with social development. Key issues that were identified by the MTT were as follows. There was non-compliance with supply chain processes. If Chair, you will pardon me, the issues of supply chain are consistently appearing across most departments. I'm sure Chair, you have noted that as I go along with the presentation. The lack of internal controls and audit findings They were not optioned by the management. There was provincial office was not in compliance with occupational health and safety issues. Essential services was compromised and not really defined in terms of minimum service agreement of Section 72 of the Labor Relations Act. And there was long period of strike by officials since January 2018, which I think it also triggered. It was one of the issues that triggered intervention into the department. There was irregular expenditure of about 14.1 million as per the ACFA report 2016-17. What would the proposed intervention with regard to this department? These are the proposed intervention. There was a need to address gap in governance and financial management. There was the need for resolution of the matter of office space for the provincial DSD and to investigate the lease of the head of office accommodation. There was a need to investigate how the department procured the current security company, which was already done. There was a need to address issues of essential services, transfer payment and subsidies to non-profit organizations, and management of conditional grant needed to be dealt with. There was a need to develop a recovery plan following the strike. What did the province submit to the ad hoc committee at the time in response to this as their own assessment? The government said it was going to submit a catch-up plan, an intervention plan, with regard to the recovery that was mentioned by the IMTT as a result of the strike, for the days that were lost as a result of the strike. The draft intervention plan was in place. Provincial department had met with national department on the 18th of May 2018 to sign the protocol agreements between National and Provincial Department of Social Development on the 30th of June 2018. The province was invited to a NEHAO meeting on the 1st of June 2018, which was chaired by the minister to resolve the current labor protest. So the meeting was between the MEC, HOD, and the union, due to the strike that had taken place in the department. And now I'm moving over to the departments that are under Section 101B, where administrators were appointed. I'm sure, Chair, now you have a picture of what sort of issues arising in the departments that were under Section 101A, where directives were issued by the executive, where administrators were not appointed. So one, Office of the Premier was one of the departments that we had mentioned earlier. The key issues identified by IMTT, there was a failure to provide effective oversight and leadership to service delivery plan, service delivery departments. There was ineffective ICT governance, establishment of 7 project management units that subsequently entered into illegal contract was also an issue. There was ineffectiveness of the PMUs in contract management, including payment for services not rendered. There was lack of enforcement of recommendations and consequence management of the Auditor General of South Africa and Public Service Commission reports. Premier-led village, township, and small dorpies and Setsokotswana programs, which weakened intergovernmental structures in the province. There was irregular expenditure of about 19.9 million rand as per ACSA report. What sort of interventions were proposed by the MTT after assessment? One was a need to review all existing delegation authorities. There was a need to ensure that all provincial departments developed service delivery improvement plans. There was a need to conduct an audit of ICT systems within the province. There was a need for a detailed planning and risk assessment on the intervention. Assessment of all PMU contracts and outsourced government businesses in the province needed to be done. Addressing the breakdown of relations with workers and communities needed to be addressed. Providing frequent feedback to the Office of the Premier and management in all provincial departments on the status of the intervention to prevent misinformation needed also to be done. Development of a coasted and time-bound plan for the intervention in the Office of the Premier needed to be done. These are the proposals that were made by the MTT. What were the submissions that were made by the government with regard to the Premier's office in the West at the time when the assessment was done? The government indicated that there were governance structures such as Bokone Bophirima Premier's Coordinating Council and Provincial Infrastructure Coordinating Council, Executive Council Technical Support, CFO Forums, Central Internal Audit Unit, etc. that existed at the time. Institutional capacity, all department had HODs and majority of SMS positions were filled according to the provincial government report. There was a healthy political administrative interface. Monitoring and evaluation systems were not supported by an adequate early warning mechanisms. District offices were tasked with service delivery, monitoring and intervention, and they were not adequately effective. There were weaknesses in the implementation of Batupele principles. Level of responsiveness by local government to EXCO was satisfactory. CDW's community development workers were not effective and efficient as they were intended. The next department chair that falls under the same category was the Department of Community Safety and Transport, where the administrator also was appointed to this department to deal with the following issues. The IMTT key findings were as follows. There was poor record management. There was financial management deficiencies. There was non-compliance with supply chain management prescripts. There was lack of oversight for SOEs and mismanagement of scholar transport and commuter transport. Assessment of community safety component revealed key findings related to under expenditure of the budget and the lack of human resource capacity. There was irregular expenditure of about 880.2 million rand. Okay, the report of the AG. What were the interventions that the MTT proposed? One, forensic investigation into the transport function was needed. Gap analysis on supply chain management policy and procedures and internal controls needed to happen. A review of strategic planning, budget, and ensure alignment was needed. A review and update risk management register was needed. Identification and assessment of cost containment measures to be put in place. Project management on infrastructure project needed to improve. Review of provincial owned entities and their relevance needed to be addressed. Compliance with audit reports needed to be addressed. Skills assessment needed to be implemented. Management of conditional grant also needed to improve. The submission by Northwest Provincial Government was as follows. All internal processes in relation to the development of the organogram structure was finalized and submitted for approval. Implement an audit action plan on an annual basis was something that was reported as it was happening. Supply chain management compliance checklist was being implemented. Department had established an internal advisory committee to investigate circumstances leading to the irregular expenditure. The department had a dedicated unit on monitoring and evaluation, though there was a general challenge in relation to the evaluation function. 87.53% of irregular expenditure was related to the commuter and scholar transport services contract. Section 101B intervention teams had signed an MOA and were expected to assume office on Monday, the 2nd of July in 2018. Next department chair, which was under Section 101B, was also the Department of Education and Sport Development. The following findings, which were very few, chair, were identified by MTT. There was non-compliance with supply chain management processes with significant irregular expenditure incurred. The department had failed to implement service delivery programs. There was irregular expenditure of about 223.7 million. What are the proposed interventions by the IMTT report? There was a need to address matters of emphasis from AG's report and impact. There was a need to strengthen financial management. Human resource management and development also needed to be strengthened. A curricular management and delivery was also needed to be strengthened. Effective and efficient management of the conditional grant needed to be addressed. Effective implementation of the early childhood development also needed to be addressed. Strengthening district coordination also needed to be dealt with. Strengthening infrastructure delivery also was needed. Strengthening the National School Nutrition Program and the Learner Transport Program needed also to be. The submission that was made by the Northwest Provincial Government in respect to the Department of Education and Sport Development was as follows. The organizational structure was approved in March 2017, but currently there was an impasse with labor as issues were still outstanding. There was a need to strengthen risk management. Sorry about that, by filling all vacancies in the audit unit. All right. Chair, the third point that was raised by provincial government in the Northwest was the capacitation of the internal control unit that was needed in order to improve detection and prevention of non-compliance with laws and regulations. There was need to fast-track investigations of irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure, and audit committee had been appointed at the time. Improvement plans for impact had been developed and were reported on a quarterly review. There was a lack of maintenance budget for school infrastructure from the equitable share to augment the conditional grants. There was a sound relation with unions and stakeholders and SGPs in the department. Next department chair is the Department of Health. Okay, you will recall that this is the department where the intervention started in 2018 before it was considered for the rest of other nine departments. So this is the department that raised a eyebrows for the executive to come into the province and do the assessment. One of the findings that the INTT discovered was that National Department of Health had already been in the province for several months, which I've already mentioned. What was found was that there was a widespread collapse of internal governance structures and the absence of effective supply chain management, as well as expenditure and financial controls within the department. There was irregular expenditure of 114.9 million rand. There was unauthorized expenditure of 99.6 million. There was fruitless and wasteful expenditure of 77.3 million as per the HS report. The MTT then made the following proposed interventions, having looked at the situation and done its own assessment. There was a need to strengthen supply chain management, focusing on identifying potential risks associated with corruption and initiation of disciplinary where applicable. Financial management, conducting diagnostic assessment by investigating the root causes and focus on internal governance, including leadership, management, and organizational arrangement. There was a need for monitoring and evaluation of progress of projects and sustainability of projects after exit. There was a need to review the organizational structure of the department and conducting a headcount verification. There was a need to restore services and bringing about order, as well as to provide labor peace, including the organizational ethics. There was a need to formulate and implement recovery plans to strengthen good administrative practices based on the findings from the assessment conducted. The provincial government chair made the following submission as their own assessment with regard to the provincial Department of Health. The national, the Northwest Department of Health had to rebuild into an organization that can comfortably fulfill its mandate of health promotion, disease prevention, and health services provision. And so they went on to say, this can only be done within the next 18 months, provided that required resources for building and sustaining such an organization was made available. There was a review that was proposed for organizational structure to determine the priority vacant post and funded post and engage labor on revised structure by the 3rd of March 2019. The department is going to investigate all contracts and address irregularities, and completion date for this was set to be the 30th of September 2018. The department was going to review the audit improvement plan for 2017-2018. It was also going to review and align procurement plans with budget and align budget to service package. The department needs to ensure that key posts such as CEO, clinical managers, nursing service managers, head of administration, clinical support were filled. The next department, Department of Public Works, The department, the IMTT discovered the following findings. After its assessment, that the department had reduced the scope of its mandate over time and deviated from its role as a custodian of the asset management plan. The interface in procurement of services, unfunded mandate, sorry, there was an interference in the procurement of services for unfunded mandates. There was ineffective financial management. The maintenance budget for roads was consumed by unfunded mandates emanating from the Premier's office, which abbreviated backlogs in road maintenance. Department did not have technical expertise in built-in environment. There was also irregular expenditure of about 550.7 million rand. What were the proposed interventions by the MTT were as follows. Reclaim the infrastructure development mandate, centralize some of its roles and responsibilities in line with provision of KIAMA, including capacity building, technical professional skills. There was a need to establish the client management unit. There was a need to require a focused planning, monitoring and implementation models for infrastructure projects, proper controls and accountability on all previously planned projects, and establish systems to manage facilities and maintenance as per their mandate. There was a need for a clear structured facility management and maintenance plan coupled with the appointment of competent service providers on term contracts. There was a need to identify the source of accumulated irregular expenditure amounting to 3.4 billion rand as at the 2017 financial year. There was also a need to review supply chain management organizational structure to ensure that it provides for adequate segregation of duties and redesign if required. The province made the following assessment. Governance structures were in place, such as functional management committees, supply chain management committees, committee that was dealing with risk management, ICT, and fraud and ethics, PMDS and audit steering committees were also in place. Dedicated unit was in place to deal with the matters of monitoring and evaluation. Average infrastructure spend for the period 2014 to 2016 amounted to 91% of the allocated 7.5 billion rand. At the time when the report was done, the department was relying mainly on the external resources for technical expertise. The department had about 13% vacancy rate. It was working on an interim structure awaiting for concurrency. On irregular expenditure, a number of investigations were underway for prior years and multi-year contracts. The backlog infrastructure for both the roads and buildings had created an increased demand for service delivery. The maintenance backlog was also increasing in respect of both buildings and roads. This is the end of the findings by the IMTT with regards to both departments that were identified as under Section 101A and under Section 101B. Now I'm going to move over to the issues that were raised by the stakeholders, which were met by the IMTT also. So Chair, the first paragraph deals with the list of the stakeholders. I'm not going to mention them, but I'm going to zoom in straight to the key issues that were raised by stakeholders. There was insufficient and ineffective governance, including political oversight. There was a widespread corruption. There was poor and lack of service delivery as a result of flawed implementation of the provincial and municipal budget. There was appointment of incompetent officials in critical positions, key vacancies. There was lack of consequence management and investigations into reported fraudulent practices. There was dysfunctionality of municipalities and unemployment and lack of support for youth initiatives. The proposals that were made by the stakeholders were as follows. Placing of the province under administration to stabilize governance and restore normality was good. A realignment of the provincial government with national government was needed. Comprehensive investigations into corruption across all levels of governance in the province was needed. Appointment of competent and ethical accounting officers and filling of critical positions was also important. Investigations into non-delivery by service providers, and most of those service providers were paid without really delivering services. was also needed. Launch of an outreach program to keep communities abreast of progress in restoring services was needed. Development and implementation of plans in collaboration with local stakeholders such as the taxi industry to address specific service delivery challenges was needed. The next slide, Chair, just made a declaration that all departments, a provincial department, had participated in the drafting of intervention plans together with the department. So there was convergent, and the department of the province supported the IMTT activities in the province. So there was convergence as far as the intervention is concerned between the province and the national executive. I'm moving over to the diagnostic report by the National Treasury with the following focus areas: provincial expenditure trends, compliance with laws and regulations, key issues in selected departments. The National Treasury looked at the provincial expenditure trend as follows. The cash balances have been positive for the past 7 years. The province had a cash balance of 1.4 billion rand at the end of 2017-18. Implementation of moratorium assisted to cap the increase in headcount and brought down overspending in compensation of employees for health, education, and sport development and public works and roads. Underspending on human settlement development grant and provincial road maintenance grant was a concern. And these have been consistently underspending in the past 2 years due to poor planning and challenges in supply chain management processes. Resource allocation to the Office of the Premier had increased significantly in the recent years. Growth in the Office of the Premier was largely due to the Office of the Premier assuming the role of an implementing body, areas such as infrastructure projects, in addition to developing policies and managing institutions. Furthermore, the shifting of Northwest Park and Tourism Board and Northwest Development Corporation was also part of the functions that the Premier, embarked on. Under compliance with laws and regulation, the National Treasury found the following. There was accumulated irregular expenditure that came to 15.3 billion rand at 31st March 2017, growing consistently at the average of 2.1 billion from 8.6 billion in 2013-2014, to 15.3 billion in 2016-17. The key contributors were as follows. Health Department had contributed about 6.4 billion rand. Public Works and Roads had contributed 3.4 billion rand. Community Safety and Transport Management contributed about 3.7 billion rand. Education and Sport Development contributed 946 billion rand. Office of the Premier contributed 135 million rand. And Rural Environment and Agricultural Development also contributed 413 million rand. The accumulated fruitless and wasteful expenditure of about 174 million as at the 31st of March 2017, it increased mainly due to Health Office of the Premier and Public Works and Roads departments. Accumulated unauthorized expenditure amounted to 384.8 million as at the same period, or in March, 2018. Key contributors to the unauthorized expenditure share were as follows, was health, community safety and transport management, and education and sport development. The accrual share were amounting to 1.1 billion, which were recorded at the beginning of 2017-2018. The key contributors to the accruals were as follows, health, community safety and transport management, and public works and roads. Consequence management share, the investigations were in progress in most cases. There were no disciplinary actions that were taken. So if you look at this slide, Chair, it actually identifies most of those departments that are under Section 101B, where administrators were appointed. They are the ones that have actually been highlighted as the main contributors to the non-compliance with laws and regulation. The National Treasury gave the diagnostic per department in the following slide. Under the Office of the Premier Chair, there was a failure to provide effective oversight and leadership to service delivery departments. There was poor performance on centralized or transversal functions.
Mr. Gamo?
Yes, Chair.
In the interest of time, we have this slide. I propose that give us an overview of each department, not necessarily reading paragraph by paragraph. That, I think, will save us more time. just give us an analysis in a very short, summarized way. Thanks.
Okay, Chair. Yeah, Chair, just to, thanks, Chair, for that. I think, Chair, to make it simple, Chair, most of these five departments, Chair, what seems to be a perverse issue is the governance issues. Issues around the procurement, the issues around the leadership challenges, the lack of effective mechanisms to monitor and evaluate. The issues around irregular expenditure are quite perverse, unauthorized expenditure, and fruitless and wasteful expenditure. These are the issues that cut it across all departments.
And I think it's better that way. And just make sure that all members of parliament, including the alternates, have got this slide so that they are able on their own to can read and make their own assessments.
Yes.
Thanks.
Yes. No, thanks, Chair. This slide actually is very important for members to go through it because it details all the diagnostic findings by the Treasury Repair Department, especially the department that fall under Section 101B. The Auditor General also made his own analysis where he looks at the overall provincial audit outcomes and section under Section 100B, key project observation and root causes of failures and key consideration for strengthening accountability, Chair. I'm just going to give you overview, Chair, slide, and then the second department I will pass. The overall provincial audit, Chair, in terms of the Auditor General, the status of audit action plan had regressed, usefulness of performance information indicators and target had regressed, the overall internal control had remained unchanged, the basic financial and performance management control had remained also unchanged. There was progress in improving ICT controls, there were accounting officer portfolio committees and provincial scopa findings had remained unchanged. The internal audit units and audit committees had regressed. The coordinating department had regressed. Chair, I will focus on the red ones where there's been a regression of performance because I think those are the key areas that one can focus on. The audit outcomes for the five departments under Section 101B were as follows. There was poor quality of financial statement, which we've spoken about. All five departments had material non-compliance. We've spoken about this. And five departments had incurred 2.3 billion rand of irregular expenditure if they are all put together. There were instances where management applied discretion to deviate from SCM processes without adequate reasons. And the AG gives you a detailed analysis per department, which I'm not going to go through, Chair, because it will be more of a duplication of what we've already done. And what are the root causes of accountability failures? As per the AG, the management did not respond with the required agency to ensure improvement in the audit outcomes. Political leadership and oversight bodies demonstrated limited political will to ensure accountability and cost management. The instability and prolonged vacancies in key positions impacted on the rate of improvement in audit outcomes. Key controls that enabled reliable and timely financial and performance reporting were not instituted. Coordinating department and role players did not adequately support other departments and entities. Provincial executive leadership did not set an example for accountability. I think this slide is very important. There were key considerations also that were made by the AG, which I am not going to go through them, Chair. I'm going to pass with your permission. This one. I will move straight to the committee observation, Chair, which I think they matter in this exercise the most than any other sections. What did the committee, the ad hoc committee, observe after all these presentations, Chair? One, there was a major concern for the committee. The major concern for the committee was the submission by the MPT indicating that supply chain management and control management process had been weakened and in some cases had collapsed. The committee welcomed the action plans and timeframes of intervention from the MPT, and key was the need to speed regularize services in the province. It was noted that the lack of capacity and skills exacerbated the extent of the governance and service delivery challenges in the provincial government. A key concern was the current fiscal environment wherein the prevailing fiscal constraints implied that funds had to be protected against any governance breaches in the system. The committee also pointed out that a clear implementation plan and recovery plan were critical for a successful intervention. The committee was most concerned with the poor outcomes in governance, notwithstanding the existence of governance structures, such as internal audit and audit committees. The committee raised concerns around the role of project management units, the level of skills and capacity in various departments, and the role of effectiveness of accounting officers. The major concern for the committee was also that submission by Northwest Provincial Government did not respond directly and in detail to specific issues raised by the IMTT. The committee views the province overall regression in audit outcomes in a serious light. The committee was of the view that empathic that unauthorized, regular, fruitless and useful expenditure was of serious concern to Parliament, and it was not to be taken lightly. The committee called on Northwest Province to adequately respond and take action in all instances where irregular, fruitless and useful expenditure was detected. The committee pointed out that good governance, adherence and compliance with due processes and legislation was non-negotiable. A number of concerning cross-cutting issues were noted by the committee that included the state and health of the political and administration interface, the alleged interference of the political leadership in the recruitment processes of administration posts, undue politicization of government programs, clarity on the role, responsibility and accountability mechanisms for accounting officers, HODs and CFOs, the status and cost of litigations at the province, the efficacy of the provincial IDP process, specific reference to the role of the Office of the Premier and the role of municipalities and the role of community development workers. In the main, then I will move over to the guiding principles that the committee came up with, which was a tool to monitor the intervention. The NCOP process may entail the following: identification of the problem, diagnostic analysis of the problem, development of action plan for the intervention, implementation of the action plan, recovery plan for the province, and exit strategy of the intervention task team chair. So chair, if there is anything that if the committee moves towards winding up the intervention, the executive towards winding up the intervention, the committee should look at the exit strategy and ensure that there is exit strategy of the intervention task team. And also that strategy will sustain what has been achieved by the intervention going forward. So the way forward, Chair, which is the last slide, was a comprehensive update by the IMTT on progress on the intervention in all key commitments and project milestones that needed to be affirmed. Oversight to visit Chair to the Northwest and further engagement with all stakeholders in the province took place towards the end of the year. 20 October. Thanks, Chair. This is the end of this presentation, Chair. I will now move over, with your permission, to the oversight report. I think also it has a number of findings and recommendations that the committee identified on site. But if, Chair, you think the time on your side.
I realize that the last two slides were basically dealing with the recommendations of the ad hoc committee.
No, it was the observations. Those were the observations.
Yes, of the ad hoc committee.
Yes, at the time when these reports were tabled before oversight.
That's correct.
Yes.
What is the next step?
The next step was I was going to go through the oversight report, but in the interest of time, I think, Chair, we can just move over to the legacy report to look at the outstanding issues, because this report, I think, gives more than enough for honourable members to chew and to sort of digest what has happened that led to the intervention.
Have you circulated the oversight report to members, the one that you're referring to?
Yes, Chair, it was circulated by the Secretary. Okay. Yes.
Okay. I suggest that if you have done so, If you have not, it's okay. But if you have done so, just spend about 5 minutes, not more than 5 minutes, on the oversight report, and maybe share with this committee the strategy that the previous ad hoc committee adopted in terms of its oversight work in the Northwest Province. Just in short.
Okay. Let me try and flight the slide. Chair, can you see the report, the oversight report on the screen?
Yes, we can see it. Yes.
Okay, Chair. I will just move over to the findings of the report. But key findings, I will not go into details. The approach, Chair, for the committee in the Parliament was that, first and foremost, the program was such that the committee traveled on a Sunday for the oversight that was going to happen during the week. And on a Sunday evening, the committee met the coordinating team of the intervention from the executive side. The coordinating team briefed the committee on the number of important issues that the committee needed to look at during oversight. And then the committee clustered department two per day. It visited two departments per day out of the 10 departments. The membership of the committee was divided into two. One group was based in Mahikeng to cover the areas of Mahikeng. The other group was based in Klerksdorp. As you know, Chair, that Northwest is a vast province. So in order for the committee to cover more ground, it had to be divided into two. And it made the work of the committee much easier in terms of covering all these things in a short space of time. So it said the committee spent about 3 days on oversight to see all the departments, and then it reserved the fourth day, which was the first day, as a day to engage all the stakeholders, including the community. As you will see, Chair. Okay, right. Now I'm on the oversight section of the report. As you can see, the membership, Chair, there was group one and the group two on that paragraph. Chair, the site visit that was undertaken, Chair, under Department of Health was Mafikeng Provincial Hospital, which there were a number of observations that came through, including improvements that were identified on some of previous challenges, such as vehicle permits that were renewed, theaters were operational, and that the nurses had been upgraded into hospital. Okay, I'll pass this one, Chair. One of the key findings, Chair, was the outsourcing of services that hospital, Chair, such as laundry and catering services. The recruitment of nurses through an agency was a challenge that was raised. Contractor who was rendering the service, Chair, was also 200 kilometers away from the hospital, which made it difficult. And then Howe also alleged that the laundry contract was awarded because of a political connection. There was non-functioning of boilers, which negatively impacted on functioning of laundry machinery, which had to undergo some repairs. The administrator indicated that she was advocating for in-house capacity, where there was low and lack of capacity rather than outsourcing. So the supply chain management remained a challenge since there were no proper procurement procedures also in place. The administrator reported that the hospital wanted to procure a boiler at an exorbitant cost for the same cost the intervention team could manage to procure 8 boilers. The intervention team was procuring the boiler, autoclaves and air conditioner as part of the package deal for the hospital. So this was one of the observations that was also very much critical. And the hospital mutual there was opening for 5 days a week and closed over the weekend. There was only 2 mutual staff and 2 porters. And the committee made some recommendations, Chair. The next site, Chair, that was visited was Sepong Hospital. Sepong Hospital. Some observations there were made that due to the closure of the health facilities dedicated to mining areas, Sepong Hospital and other local hospitals were experiencing overcrowding. The hospital operated like a district. It was offering services from primary healthcare to tertiary healthcare, while the budget remained limited to 45 million rand for drugs. It was reported that the hospital had enough doctors, but the employment of foreign doctors was noted and remained a concern for the committee. The issue also, Chair, that they raised there was also that the SA-born doctors were not willing to work in the province, but they preferred to work in big cities. While there was a moratorium imposed by National Treasury, the hospital was advertising some vacant posts, but there were still more vacant posts needed to be filled. And Nehao indicated that non-filling of vacant posts was creating more work for the existing staff, and this was a concern. The hospital did not have a computerized patient record. It was using a manual patient record, which took longer for the patient to obtain their record.
Okay. I think we have a sense about the oversight report and the work that you did, including the areas that you visited. I think it's okay. Can you just, in short, tackle the last presentation?
Okay. So, Chair, the other site that was visited and I had was EMS, Chair, as well. So I wanted to indicate that.
Okay.
Yes, it was EMS, Emergency Services.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. I'm not sure, Chair, if you can see the legacy report of the
yes.
committee. Okay, on the screen. All right.
Yes,
Chair,
I'll just
go straight, Chair, to the outstanding issues in the interest of time, Chair.
Yeah.
So that when the committee engages with the MTT in the next meeting. The next meeting, the committee, this has an appreciation of what issues were not done at the time, the report, which might have achieved by now. The report consists of the progress that has been done per sector. What makes it really a longer report, because it deals with the sector issues, but also it deals with the cross-cutting issues. Okay. Chair, I'm going to go to the department that falls under Section 100, which is Department of Health, Chair. Where administrators were appointed. The outstanding issues, Chair, there, you can see, Chair, that the table consists of 2 columns. One column deals with the recommendations that the committee made after the oversight, and then the second column deals with the progress. as per the report that was presented by the IMTT in 2019 February. But over and above that, there is a section below that deals with the outstanding issues, which I'm going to focus on, Chair. One of the issues that were outstanding, Chair, was to make sure that all funds that were lost due to financial misconduct, corruption, transgression of the PFMA irregular contract overpayment to meet YOSA, Buthelezi, high care contractors were covered, and consequence management have been done without following a PFMA in the supply chain management chair in the Department of Health. And if members read through the report, per certa, they will discover that there's a lot of clear findings and recommendations that were made with regard to this specific contractor, including the fact that there was a need to ensure that the verification process takes place, because there were some also issues such as the duplication of invoices that had happened with regard to this contractor, where a Buthelezi ambulances had changed the name in the middle of the contract, and the Department of Health had to pay twice for one contract. And make sure that all cases which are handled by the Hawks, which were 49 cases, the SIU, which handled 44 cases, were finalized and implicated officials and persons were charged. The other outstanding issue, Chair, was to make sure that all the critical posts amounting to 2,198 advertised were filled without delay. The other issue was to ensure that the discussion between the Northwest Department of Health, the National Department and Provincial Treasury, National Treasury, to address the budget shortage were concluded. This was going to assist to resolve the issue of staff and equipment shortage in Mahikeng Provincial Hospital. It was going to enable the fifth theater to become functional and to ensure that the investigation of the poor performance of supply chain management structures at the district level and bigger hospitals was concluded by 2019. We needed to make sure that the invoice tracking mechanism was established as a way to improve payment in around times. This was going to reduce backlog, unpaid invoices, and further reduce staff costs. On the Department of Safety and Transport Management, Chair, the outstanding issues were as follows. The department needed to engage the provincial treasury and national treasury on issues around Northwest Development Cooperation. It needed to improve coordination between national treasury and justice cluster policing services and administrators on forensic investigation. There was a need to strengthen the war room, direct and coordinate efforts to address service delivery breakdowns. There was a need to implement the post-audit action plan for the audit general findings. Assessment to assess the capacity needed to be done and develop a capacity building plan to mitigate the vacuum that may arise through disengagement of the ICT PMU. There was a need to engage with all programs on budgeting to ensure alignment with the national treasury guidelines. And at the Department of Education, Chair, the outstanding issues were as follows. Disruption of schools was an issue, Chair, that was not resolved. The safety in schools was also an issue that was not resolved. Issues around drugs and gangsters that were threatening the teaching programs. Integration and transformation was also an issue, Chair, that was not resolved. Where there were areas in province where in integration and transformation was still a challenge. Department of Public Works and roads, Chair, had the following outstanding issues. There were outstanding legal and disciplinary cases that needed to be concluded. There were outstanding and disputed claims and invoices that needed to be sorted out. There was disgruntled communities as a result of unfunded commitments made for upgrading of roads. The province was under budgeting for upgrading and maintenance of roads, Chair. And Chair, the section that follows that is the progress on cross-cutting matters, Chair. then I will skip that one and go to the cross-cutting issues that need to be followed up by this parliament, by this committee. One, the Department of Public Service and Administration, the Department of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs, National Treasury, and Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation should develop legislation to guide the implementation of the intervention in terms of Section 103 of the Constitution. Chair, this was one of the very strong recommendations that were made by the former committee, that as much as the Constitution provides for the intervention, but there is no mechanism to guide the intervention. So the legislation should be an overarching legislation. You have the intervention being promulgated by the Constitution for local government and for provinces, but at the same time also don't have the same provision for the national departments. And some of the provincial intervention may be necessitated as a result of the lack of support from other spheres of government. Chair, the committee was concerned that there is a need to address some of those gaps. The IMTT should ensure the sustainability of the intervention post the intervention, which is referring to the sound financial management systems, ensure internal controls, governance and accountability systems, ensure supply chain management processes were improved, ensure improved service delivery, prevention of irregular expenditures, unauthorized, fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Audit findings were addressed on a continuous basis. The NCOP should monitor all the disciplinary actions taken in criminal charges, criminal investigation. The IMTT should table a financial report, talks to the meeting that the committee is going to have with the IMTT, chair in the next few days, reflected in the program, but in our invite to the MTT, we should also indicate that MTT should table a financial report for all 10 departments under the intervention during the sixth parliament, since it was unable to do so in the fifth parliament. So that report was requested in the fifth parliament, but was not a table. This will assist parliament to have a complete picture for both performance and fiscal position of West Province. Intervention is now, the committee went on to say the intervention at the time of the report was completed. It was in its implementation phase to be followed by the recovery phase, the exit phase, and strategy had to be developed in such a way that it ensures sustainability of the intervention post the intervention and that the set objectives were met. The Ad-Hoc Committee have been visited the Northwest Province. The following recommendations were made to the House that based on the evidence presented by the Northwest Provincial Government, Interministerial Task Team, the General, National Treasury, and the Committee Oversight visit, the intervention should be approved and that the Ad-Hoc Committee, as established by the Council, must file the intervention, continue to review the intervention regularly and make any appropriate recommendation to the National Executive. And I think that's why this committee has been established to perform exactly this function, Chair. I will end here, Chair. But the next section is the thank you very much.
Okay. In the meantime, can you slide the proposed program for the committee based on the reports that Mr. Dobo has presented to you? We isolated key institutions and players who must be engaged, especially in terms of the legacy report, following up all the issues which were identified by our predecessor, the previous Ad Hoc Committee on Section 100 intervention in the Northwest. Our plan is to engage with Minister Nkosazana Zuma, who is the chairperson of the IMTT, together with all the ministers. That is next week, Monday. Next week, Friday, on the 19th, we're planning to get a briefing from the National Treasury and the Auditor General. You'd remember that part of the issues that we needed to follow up was to get the financial reports from the different departments. And I think the National Treasury will be quite important in this regard to give us an update report about the state of finances of these municipalities. But we also need the Auditor General to stress to this committee what has happened since the intervention. Are there improvements or there are no improvements, and what is it that needs to happen? And in that sense, given the issues that were flagged by the Auditor General and all of that, we need to be brought in detail in respect of all these particular issues. But as you are also aware, there are a lot of issues which border on criminal investigation, progress in that respect. We're planning that on the 22nd of February to invite the SIU, the NPA, and the Hawks to brief this committee on all the cases which were forwarded to them. That 3 years down the line, it seems that there is little progress in terms of the report that has been registered in this. And we're expecting them to give us all the details about these criminal cases that were open in respect of this. In enforcing consequence management. But after that, we're planning to do an oversight visit to the Northwest Province starting from the 5th and the 1st of March until the 5th of March. And then on the 14th, we're planning to table a report of this committee. So that we have a discussion whether it addresses the issues that we are expected to address and identify what are the outstanding issues. And we're planning that once we've done that on the 19th of March, we should be in the position to adopt the oversight report as well as the report of the Section 100 intervention that must then be forwarded to Parliament. This is what has transpired, and thank you very much once more, Mr. Domo, for the presentation. I know that it took you a long time to do this presentation and to even prepare them, but at least from this vantage point of view, members have got a sense about the issues which necessitated the invocation of Section 100 in the Northwest Province and how different committees, including the province, as well as the national department, dealt with the issues or identified the issues and dealt with those particular issues. And ours is to ensure that we play our oversight role to ensure that all of these issues pertaining to the Northwest in terms of Section 100 intervention are followed up, are addressed quite appropriately, and at the end of the day, there is the required stability in the Northwest and that the Northwest government is able to function like all other governments in the Republic. With that, honorable members, I want to open for deliberations. If you want to ask questions, do so. If you want to make comments, do so. If you want to make contributions to empower this whole process, do so that we are able to ensure that we are positioned in such a way that we will accomplish the predetermined objectives which inspired the very existence of this committee to ensure that we do our oversight work. Over to you, honorable members. I'm open to take hands. I see Honorable Zandamela, Honorable Dutoy, Honorable Fraser, Honorable Gillian. Let me take the first four hands. Can I start with you, Honorable Zandamela?
No, thanks, Chair. Mine is just on the recommendation to the Parliament. Can we be provided with the detailed information. For an example, the 49 cases that were settled with the SIU and the Hawks. You know, if perhaps we can get the detailed information with regard to these cases. And then the last one that I wanted to raise to you, Chair, is the issue of the time allocated to the committee to present the report in the House. I see we only got 5 days. I don't know if it's going to be enough. I think we've got a lot of meetings in between, especially with the FIUs, the visual meetings that are planned. But I'm a bit concerned with the 5 days if we'll be able to be able to get to all the departments, the five that are on 1B and the one that are on the section 101 and all those kinds of things. So if perhaps we can be provided with the information, the information that we will receive today in the presentation, Chair, it's two summaries. We can perhaps be provided with the detailed information. Thanks, Chair.
The reason that we have invited the Hawks, the SIU and NPA is precisely to get the details of all of these cases. We will communicate that information to them that we need all the full details of these cases and what are the blockages in terms of dealing with them. In this case, we are just reporting to you that this is a matter that was given to us and that we must follow up. On the question of the 5 days visit to the Northwest, we take into consideration the issue of the lockdown regulation, and as you are aware, our movements are quite restricted. And given the experience of the previous committee, I think because as the report indicates, members were split into two groups, so that they are able to cover sufficient ground. And I think in this case, this is something that we can consider doing as a committee, unlike going to the Northwest and spend the whole time. But we'll see how it goes. If we are able to cover the ground, we will discuss as a committee and say what do we do in case that we are not that the information that to make Parliament understand better the state of affairs in the Northwest. We'll see how it goes in that sense. Honorable Professor.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Chair, thank you very much for the report to Mr. Dlomo that he has compiled for us. But if I take the first part of the report, and I know what's going on the ground, it doesn't speak to one another. I cannot see that there is any improvement. And I've been working closely with MECs, the Premier, HODs, the past 6 months. Then we don't see that there is really an improvement. So I just plead that we take our time and that we do a report that is meaningful and that would make a change in Northwest. It's no time, it is of no use that we run through this and we leave the province and a few months after that, they're back at square one. We see how much things are really a big concern and is affecting citizens all over the province, in hospitals, in schools, in transport, in roads, in everything like that. We cannot afford to slip this one. So I just plead that we take our time and that we do something that is meaningful in reporting back to Parliament. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, points noted. Honorable Dutoy.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I also appreciate the presentation and the information provided. Requesting that we also have a look at departmental compilation that was in place in the fifth parliament, and also compare it to the same people that might still be in those positions during the sixth parliament, be re-elected, re-employed, etc., to see who might have been part of the misconduct that took place, and are those people still in employment at the relevant department. The Auditor General alluded last week that they are there to name and shame and not to prosecute and basically sink their teeth in. So it's up to us now to see if the people that might have been involved are still in those positions. Chair, then I want to know, with regards to our schedule, the visits to the Northwest Province to these specific areas, the schedule that was flighted just now indicated that we must be there from the 1st till the 5th of March. Now, that is over the Easter weekend, and it's a religious holiday. I want to know if we can please have a look at that and see to it that we move it earlier in February, when we have our constituency period, that is not going to be conflicting with our religious practices, for us to enable us to still fulfill this duty that we have to fulfill. Thank you, Chair.
I didn't even check that the Easter weekend is from the 1st of March. I normally know that it is mostly in April, but this is a matter that we can check so that we know that during that time everybody is busy and we may not get what we want, but we'll look into that. Thank you very much. Honorable Gilliam.
Chairperson, allow me first to thank the content advisor for the brief presentations that we received, and also that we receive it way before time so that we can go through it. Chair, I am a bit disturbed when Member Fisser referred to that she is underground in the Northwest and in St. Mark alreeds a conclusion of the werk wat ons nog steeds moet gaan doen. I think if we are serious about this at our committee, Chair, we must leave our feelings, or if we are from that province, leave the work that we must still conduct in that province voordat ons alreeds 'n besluit neem en bevooroordeeld optree. It is very important when we are part of this ad hoc committee, Chair, that we familiarize ourselves with the reports and with the oversight that we must go to in this province. And I just want to say, Chairperson, this is not going to be an easy task for all of us, but let's go and do our work and come up with a report that will be to the benefit of all the people staying in the Northwest. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Gilliam. Honorable Uto, I'll just check quickly, when is the Easter weekend? It's not the 1st of March, but the 1st of April. I think we are within what we want to achieve at the end of the day. It's okay.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, no problem. The next member who wants to speak is Honorable Sileku, followed by Honorable Raida, followed by Honorable Nita, followed by Honorable Yunis Karim. I will take it from there. Yes. In that order, please.
No, thank you very much, Chair. Allow me to greet all the members. Chair, mine is just a few observations. And the first one, Chair, is based on the time allocated to us as an ad hoc committee. If you look at it, that there is little time that is given to us, and that we are only allowed in one opportunity to engage with all these stakeholders that we are going to engage with. And judging by this engagement that we had today, so some of the information has been omitted, or some of the members might not have read some of the information and because of time. So that's my first worry, that the time allocated to us to report back to the House is worrisome. Because if we really want to do a proper job in terms of giving a proper recommendation that can assist the residents of Northwest, I think the issue of time of when we should report back to the House should actually be looked at, unless we are just going to be a rubber stamp and just go through the processes. That's my first concern, Chair. And my second concern, Chair, I see there's a norm that is developing when we are dealing with the interventions. Because in terms of legislation that the member of the executive would have to report to the House within a period of 14 days, and then we as the NCOP will have to agree or disagree on the intervention within a period of 180 days, and I believe that has been done. But what is of concern, Chair, is that maybe I have not heard that, is that when we are in the House and there was a report, we go to oversight and we come back, when you make a recommendation or saying we agree, but these are our recommendation, we tend not to be taken very serious as a National Council of Provinces in terms of our recommendations. We say that certain reports must be tabled to the NCOP. It's not done, and this particular case as well, you know, I can be corrected. I believe that when a recommendation was made, whether we agree or disagree with this particular intervention, that there were certain recommendation that we have made in terms of reports of the different departments that are under intervention that were supposed to be tabled to the House, which, you know, was not done. And why do I say so, Chair, is because remember now, even the establishment of this particular ad hoc committee took us a year and a half for it to be established. Then if we did not make, you know, a noise about this particular intervention, I can truly say that this intervention, this adult committee was not going to be established. So that's the issue that we need to look at and be serious about, Chair. So basically, Chair, that's just those few issues, and I don't want to eat time for the other members. Thank you very much.
Okay. I'll comment at the end. Honorable Ryder.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Yeah, I'm not going to take up a lot of time. I've been well covered by Honorable Fisser, Dutoy, and Seleko. I just want to say that it would help me greatly, Chair, if we can have the actual resolutions that were taken by the NCOP. So 18 months ago and the current resolution, just so that we can have a point of reference and we can be guided and see exactly what our terms are. So if those can be circulated to members, I would appreciate it, please. That's my first one. The second one is also to say I noted the program that you set out. It was flashed on the screen. I was still writing when it was taken off the screen. So if I can ask for that to be sent out quite urgently. It looked like a fairly good program, but it's difficult to comment, not having a good sight of it. If that can be sent out properly for us to evaluate and take up and see if we are actually responding in our actions to what the recommendations are from that handover report, as it were. And then just to confirm that, Honorable Gillian, if you drive through the Northwest Province, you will see that Honorable Fisher's comments are not unfounded, and actually she was well placed to make the comments that she did. Thank you very much, Chair.
Honorable Nita.
Thanks, Chair. Let me also, Chair, thank the presenter for the report. Chair, mine is a question of clarity. Maybe it's out of not being part of the last meeting, Chair. You know, in the presentation, and to the department that is under section 101, section 100B, it's treasury, Chair. Chair, what I want to know, the point that the presenter is saying, there was a challenge of steel audits, and the response is saying it is in progress, and also the rationalization of the entities of government. But why I'm raising this thing, Chair, at the end, I didn't hear in their final report what are they saying about those matters, because they are so important, especially in the Department of Treasury in the province. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mita. Honorable Yunis Karim, over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just firstly, I don't know if I've got you right, Chairperson. You said we were going to report from Treasury and the AG on the state of finances of the municipalities. If it's the municipalities, was that what you meant? Because I was a Section 100 intervention.
No, it's provinces. It's from the province.
Okay. Maybe I heard you wrong. That's a relief, because then the municipalities firstly will enter into, as you know, a turf battle, because the MEC of local government cocktail will say, well, it's here. I'm glad about that. Secondly, I agree with those who say we shouldn't rush it, but we should take into account also that we're not starting from square one, firstly. There's already work done in this area, and we shouldn't reinvent the wheel. What we want, basically, as I understand it, are updates, firstly, from the work of the previous ad hoc committee in the last term of Parliament, and secondly, from the briefing we got by the ministers that are relevant in the NCOP late last year, before we had that decision to get this committee going. So on the one hand, we don't want to reinvent the wheel. We're not starting from scratch. On the other hand, we don't want to rush it. So one of the questions that arises is, and maybe Mr. Dlomo can help, or perhaps because the lawyers have dealt with this Section 100 and so on and 139 interventions, maybe Frank Jenkins also help. Has there been a precedent for this before, where there's been a Section 100 intervention, an ad hoc or other committee in the NCOP addressed the Section 100 intervention and then didn't finish the work for it, excuse me, and then got carried over into a new term with a new committee, presumably lots of new members, and so on. So is there some precedent of how they, if such a situation occurred before, Comrade Chair, managed the process? Thank you.
Before Mr. Lomo responds to some of the technical and administrative issues that you raised, honorable members, I just want to draw your attention to the following, that this committee, the ad hoc committee, was established last year in December. And when it was established, it was made clear as to its composition, as well as its lifespan. In terms of that resolution of the House, which established this committee, we are expected to table the report of the committee by the 26th of March, 2021. That is what we resolved in the House. But I do understand what members are saying, and my view is that let us see how it goes, because the fact of the matter is that we want to bring about a long-term sustainable solution to the problems of the Northwest so that they don't recur again. And we want to do our work very, very diligently. And my view is that let us stick to the resolution of the House. If in the course of the work of the committee, we think that we are not going to either accomplish it by the set date, or there would still be outstanding work to be done by the committee, we can make that recommendation to the House so that the House adopts it. And if in that sense we say that follow-up must be made or a new committee or the same committee must continue to do the work. That we shall do when we realize that we have not covered the ground sufficiently in the way that we expected it to be covered. My view is that in that sense we'll do that, but I'm just reminding honorable members that we must remember that we have been established by Parliament with a very clear cut time frame of submitting the report before Parliament. And in that sense, I think, because it will be in the best interest of all of us as members of Parliament, particularly as we play our oversight function, that we help the province in terms of that particular work. And my view is that let us wait up until we cross that bridge. Let me give over, before I deal with all other issues, give over to Mr. Dromo to just respond on my honorable. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and honorable members. I think a number of questions, you have dealt with them in your reaction. I'll respond to the following question. The first question I will give but my colleagues from the legal service will also assist the question of Mr. Karim. They ask about the precedence that has been set by other interventions that has been there before, such as Limpopo, Eastern Cape, Free State, and so forth. The issue again, Chair, that has been carried over from one intervention to another, has been an issue of the modalities of how, after you've implemented an intervention in the province, how you go about it, the non-existence of the guidelines of the intervention, as to what extent does the province qualify to be put under intervention. Clear guidelines and parameters that are set. We don't have that. We only have the constitution on section 100 that gives us those provisions. But the modalities as to how you implement it, to what extent do you consider exiting the intervention? There are no parameters, Chair. So it is a challenge for not only for the executive, but also for Parliament, because a committee of this nature would have an opportunity also to reaffirm the recommendations of other committees that have been put in place to oversee previous interventions. To say, as Parliament, it really becomes difficult for us to oversee an intervention when we don't have mechanisms that are clearly outlining the modus operandi of the intervention. When do we go in there to implement intervention as the executive Parliament? What is the role of Parliament from that point of view? And therefore, when should the intervention be exited? What are the parameters that need to be put in place to make sure that that intervention is also sustainable and after the exit? So that guideline is needed, that legislation is needed. It's one of the things, Chair, that I can raise with Mr. Karim. So therefore, in the absence of that, there's been no clear reporting as to when is the intervention going to exit, how did it exit, what are the things that we looked at in Limpopo, for instance, for the intervention to exit there. In the Eastern Cape, what are the things that we looked at, except generalizing on performance and financial management issues, which vary in nature, because you may think things are improving today, but next week things might change when certain officials leave some of the key positions. When they leave with institutional memory in the department, to another department, and things fall apart. Even the intervention team, when the intervention team comes out of the province or out of the municipality, we've heard reports, even in Salga, in some instances, that when the intervention team comes out of the municipality, the municipality collapses, the system collapses, because we are going to put back the same people who were actually part of the problem before the intervention. So that legislation will have to deal decisively with some of the intricacies that will need to make sure that the impact of the intervention is sustained.
The second question is around Chair, if I may, the provincial treasurer is not under Section 100B, but it is under Section 100A, where the executive, national executive, issued directives. There was no administrator appointed for that department. There were directives that the current, the existing leadership of the provincial treasurer needed to implement. And those issues that were identified by the executive range from supply chain management weaknesses, from M&E weaknesses, from financial control that had collapsed, unauthorized expenditure, and they range from the irregular expenditure and accruals. And so if Chair, Honourable Member, looks at the legacy report, then captures the progress as far as each department is concerned. Provincial Treasurer is included. It has got, there's a report there in that section which deals with the progress made in that department, what has been done in addressing these issues, and what is still outstanding that this committee needs to look at going forward. So the legacy report is a very key, clear report in carrying the work of the fifth parliament into the sixth parliament. The new committee can tap into that, look into that, but use the other documents that I've just presented as a base to get more clarity and more information on some of the things that are raised in the report. Another issue that was raised to respond to is the issue around the program, the oversight program, or the oversight visit rather, that needs to happen, whether 5 days will be enough or not. Look, Chair, based on the experience in the fifth parliament, it was simple and straightforward. You've got 10 departments that are under administration. First group is under Section 101A, the second group is under Section 101B. So what you do, you divide the committee into two groups. One group will cover departments in the Mahikeng. The other group will cover the departments, the area of Clerk's Job. And you divide the department into five groups. So per day, if you see two departments, say for instance, you arrive on Sunday as a traveling day, you arrive on Sunday, you meet the coordinating team in the evening at the hotel, you get a debriefing from the coordinating team, from the national executive. The following day, you see two departments, visit some sites that need to be visited to look at the issues that were raised, if they were addressed or not. The second day, you also do the same. You see the two departments, which is Tuesday. You visit some sites that are raised as problematic. And the other group also does the same. So 8 departments will already be covered on the second day of oversight. So on Wednesday, you're only remaining with one department, the group, which you're going to cover. And that one department, you can deal with it as early as possible, and then so to get some time to rest. And as a team, we'll be reporting on a daily basis in each and every day of oversight. We'll be giving a briefing in the evening so that we make our work easier to collaborate the report. So the third day, after you've dealt with one department, you're remaining with the third day. The third day, you could reserve the third day for stakeholder engagement. Because on this day, really, there are no departments that are going to engage. We are done in that state with the departments. Engage the stakeholders around there, which are also cited in the report, labor being one of them, which was very critical and very instrumental in the during the oversight. Some of the local organizations were also there. We will also identify, together with the Office of Parliament based in the Northwest, which is called Democracy Offices, will try and work together to identify some of the stakeholders that are critical, because this oversight visit is also important in ensuring that the committee reports back to the issues that were raised during the 2018 oversight that were raised by the stakeholders. So this day, that's a stakeholder engagement day. But then on a Friday, you're traveling back to Cape Town, or you're traveling back to your bases, to your respective provinces, Chair. So the oversight is done. Around the issue of FIU and NOx, I was asked to give, to flag the figures of cases that are submitted to the respective enforcement or enforcement agencies. They will come and give the details and merits of the cases. Thank you very much, sir. I hope I'm not leaving off anything. Thank you very much, sir. Thanks.
Thank you very much. I think it is very, very much clear. You also covered some issues that I wanted to cover. But my view is that what must propel this committee is to not look at issues from our political party's point of view. We must understand that when Section 100 of the Constitution was invoked by the left, and the question is, has those problems disappeared or not? Are they still there or not? The jury is out there because this committee on its own, playing an oversight function, it has got to establish that. Whether the governance issues have been attended to, whether the financial issues have been attended to, whether the disciplinary issues, the issues which border on criminality, the cases which were referred to the law enforcement agencies, have they been attended to? And which are those cases? What are the case numbers? And what has happened to all those particular cases? Were people arrested? Were they prosecuted? And all of that. This is the work of the committee, this committee, to establish that and make the necessary recommendations. And as I indicated, if we think that there are a lot of other issues that are left behind, that are outstanding, that needs to be followed up, we will make those recommendations to the House and then make some suggestions on how the House must deal with those particular issues. And as I indicated, to play our oversight, that will continue. Or if we take and package these issues to be followed up by different select committees within the NCOP, that we shall make at the end of the day. For me, it is premature to determine what is it exactly in precision that we need to do when we have not even yet started with the work. I think the reason why we brought in the legacy report and sharing some experiences of the previous committee was precisely that, because we do not want to reinvent the wheel. We don't want to start the process afresh. The process has been there, and we need to ensure that we improve on the process and just follow up all the issues which were identified by the fifth parliament. And in that sense, in my view, it will make our work as an ad hoc committee very, very easy, and that in that sense we'll achieve our own objectives. I'm not sure whether is there anyone member of parliament who wants to make one or two inputs. Honorable Ryder, we will make sure that the program is circulated to all members. I'm aware that other members, most of the members, have received the program, but will adjust it and ensure that every member is receiving it. And I've also requested the administration that they must send even the alternates in this committee the program and the documents, so that they must also familiarize themselves with the issues pertaining to the Section 100 intervention in the Northwest. And at some point, because if we agree that we are going to divide our work, I'm sure part of the recommendation that we can make to our principals is to allow the alternates to participate, even if they will not have the voting right, to participate in order to enhance the work of this committee. And this is something that we can look at to ensure that at the end of the day, we're as inclusive as possible, and we make an impact in terms of the work of the committee, and we produce quality results that will leave an indelible imprint in terms of the Northwest, so that there must be stability, there must be normality, and that the province must be like all other provinces in terms of doing its work and discharging its constitutional obligations. Can I just establish, is there any other member who wants to?
It's myself, Chair. An alternate.
Sorry? Yeah. Oh, you want to say something? Yeah. Yes.
I just want to check. I see there's on the chat group, a note was sent that speaks to the cabinet. I will draw in the Section 100 intervention in Northwest. Obviously, moving forward, then it impacts on the on our program. Maybe the legal gurus could probably just try to make a reflection on that. Earlier on, I had raised my hand, but it was more on the issue that Honorable Karim had raised around the precedence. But my angle was emanating from the fact that the administration was on the previous administration, and the assumption was that it was the election and the election of the new executive, new departments, definitely there is a legal vacuum in terms of what happens thereof. So probably maybe the gurus could share with us what does this imply if last day in December the cabinet had taken a decision to terminate the Section 100 intervention, because now it impacts on our way. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Now we're meeting the members of the cabinet led by Dr. Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma on Mondays. This is one of the questions that they will have to address to us, how far they, if they are exiting the Northwest, what is their exit plan, and when are they intending to do that? We shall get that information in detail when they brief this committee next week, Monday. I think we have consistently said, and I think Mr. Dramo also raised the point, that one of the limitations, which was also identified by the previous committee, was the fact that there is no legislation at the moment that regulates whether Section 100 intervention or Section 139 intervention as it pertains to municipalities, and that there is a process that is unfolded by government, that the bill should be prepared, that must go to parliament, so that all the necessary processes are followed in that instance. And I think that will really help to regulate the interventions, because as matters stand, there is no uniformity, there is no approach, and the question as to when does it gets terminated, when we have the fresh election, the intervention ends or not. These are the issues that are still problematic, and the legislation can go a long way in terms of addressing that. But I can see we have Mr. Jenkins from the legal unit of Parliament. He may want to help us in that regard. Anything in relation to that, Mr. Jenkins?
Good afternoon, Chairperson and honorable members. I hope you can hear me. Sir, I think the question that you've just raised, whether the intervention starts over or changes shape if there's an election and there's a new administration, the answer is no. It remains exactly as it is. There was a decision taken by an authorized person, namely cabinet actually as a whole, to make the intervention. It's done on the name of the relevant member of the executive. But it remains like that, although they might get voted out and a new administration might be voted in. It might be a different political party, like we see in some other countries, but the intervention will remain legally stable unless another decision by an authorized person is taken, Chair. So the intervention remains the same. Chair, secondly, I posted on the chat just the article I found while I was just scanning through the internet, and it's not something I was aware of. I thought the committee should be aware of that there was a decision taken by Cabinet, according to this article, to end the intervention at the end of the financial year 2020-2021, which means end of March this year, and that's probably why the report of the committee is scheduled as it is, because it. The reason I posted it, Chair, is because it informs the question, the work of the committee. So the committee is not there to see if the intervention is correct, I would say. I would say now the executive, and you will probably hear on Monday, and I won't anticipate it, whether the intervention is has reached certain fruits or has delivered certain fruits. And if it has, Chair, then the committee's work, I would suggest, is the province in a position to continue? Is the executive, because you are having oversight over the intervention. The action of intervention is done by the national executive. So you're having oversight over that national executive to see if they are doing the intervention properly according to the constitution. So it's important to know that they have a certain time frame in their minds. Chair, lastly, the question whether there has been an intervention that sort of straddled the elections. I think the intervention in Limpopo started in 2011, 2012, and it ended at the end of 2014. So that was a new administration at that stage. And in the NCOP, it was handled by the committee of Mr. De Beer, the standing select committee on finance, dealt with it. So they dealt with it before the elections, and after the elections in 2014, they finalized it and the intervention was stopped then. Whether that informs the operation, how we will do that, I'm not 100% sure. I haven't paid that much attention to it, Chair. That's my input. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Members. From now on, we are going to refine our program in relation to your inputs and make it a very, very good program. That must take us forward. We are also going to develop a program for the oversight in the Northwest, working with the National Intervention Team. We are also going to forward all the outstanding issues as pertaining to the work of the previous intervention team. That is the committee in the as contained in the legacy report to the relevant bodies, if it is matters pertaining to the Auditor General, he will have to, when they come here, address us on those issues. If it is National Treasury, they will have to address us on all those issues and other issues to the departments as well, so that we cover the ground as we are supposed to cover it. On that note, thank you very much, Honourable Members, for attending this meeting. I think this was a very, very useful meeting, which helped us to deepen our understanding about the issues that inspired the very need to invoke Section 100 of the Constitution in the Northwest and the work that was done previously. And as it were, we are going to continue along those lines from that particular work that was done, and hopefully ensure that there are improvements in terms of what is it that needs to be done. On that note, thank you very much. The meeting is closed. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson.